Today, on Rainbow Country, gender identity. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome to Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. So, do you have an interesting story to share? Maybe you have an upcoming project and you want to get the word out on air. Get in touch with me. I will have you on the show. On socials, at Mark Tara Music. My email, mark@marktara.com. My friends, it's just that simple. Man-Made, a trans bodybuilding documentary, comes out on VOD worldwide November the 7th. Man-Made follows the extraordinary lives of four transgender men as they prepare to compete in TransFitCon, the only trans bodybuilding competition in the world, held in Atlanta, Georgia. Man-Made, available on VOD, video on demand, platforms worldwide on November the 7th. Discover your next favorite artist. Indie Week runs November the 13th to the 17th, featuring over 150 acts from 18 countries across 25 venues. Tickets and passes are on sale now. Here is what you have to look forward to. Over 10,000 attendees. Artist showcases. Indie Week Awards show. But wait, there's more. Over 65 speakers, health and wellness day, tech day, demo listening sessions, industry panels, mentorships. Indie Week, a 5-day music festival and industry conference, runs November the 13th to the 17th. For more information, indieweek.com. CIUT's fall membership drive is on. So, if you enjoy what we've been doing here at CIUT over the last 32 plus years, with a listenership on the FM dial of over 200,000 listeners per week, if you enjoy what we do here at CIUT, if you enjoy what we're doing here on Rainbow Country, the station's number one gay and lesbian radio show, I hope you will consider giving a donation to the station. Donations of $25 or more automatically get a charity tax receipt. For more information, CIUT.FM. So, I'm doing something new. I'm evolving Rainbow Country. I'm doing an official Spotify playlist for the songs featured on each episode going forward. As you know, Rainbow Country is a 2-hour radio show. The second hour features music from LGBT recording artists from around the world, independent artists in general, and artists that you will recognize for sure. But if you stay with me, if you stick with me, I hope to bring you music worth hearing. Again, the official Rainbow Country podcast on Spotify. Look for it, hear it, enjoy it, like it, follow it. Out as of today. So my friends, this is episode 175. Today, gender identity. So gender identity has been in the news here in Ontario over the past few weeks, due in part to Megan Murphy, a BC-based journalist who believes transgender rights endanger women and undermine their rights. She had a lecture here in Toronto that was met by hundreds of protesters. A few weeks ago, I caught up with scholar and activist Jeffrey Evanoni, as well as LGBT life coach and podcaster Darren Steele, to get their take on gender identity. That interview, up next. So joining me in studio, he is a LGBTQ life coach, a thought leader, a publisher, a writer, and a podcaster. He is Darren Steele. Welcome back to Rainbow Country, Darren.
Yay, glad to be back. Thank you.
So joining us on the phone, he is a scholar. He is an activist, a writer for Queer History for the People and Think Queerly. He is Jeffrey Evanoni. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am well. So to start off, I want to get a bit of background on both my guests. And Jeffrey, let's start off with yourself. If you can give us a bit of background on yourself, your work, your writings, that sort of thing, go for it.
Sure. I'm an educator, university professor, writer. My PhD is in American studies, and I specialize in gender and LGBTQ studies.
And Darren Steele, same thing with yourself. Why don't you give us a bit of background on yourself, your work, the things that you do? Go for it.
Sure. Well, I'd like to say that my mission is to help people use their difference to make a difference. And I do that in a number of ways. I have my own podcast, The Living Out Podcast. I have a publication called Think Queerly that Jeffrey also writes on, including myself. And I do life coaching more for creatives and other LGBTQ people.
So I came across a TED Talk from Margaret Nichols, the director of the Institute for Personal Growth. And essentially, she sums up in about 5 minutes what's been happening over the last, say, 30 years. So on the other side of this clip, I'm going to get Jeffrey's take, Darren's take on what we just heard when it comes to gender identity. But first up here is Margaret Nichols, the director of the Institute for Personal Growth.
I'm Margie Nichols. I'm a sex therapist, a psychologist, and I'm the director of a psychotherapy agency here in Jersey City called the Institute for Personal Growth. IPG, ever since our creation in 1983, has always worked with the LGBT community. And so I have over 30 years of experience working with transgender clients. And I've had an opportunity over that period of time to really see the changes. In the 1980s and the 1990s, all the transgender people that came into IPG were usually biological males transitioning to be women, and they were adults. Transgender children were considered so rare that there were only a few clinics in the whole world that worked with them. And female to male, biological women that wanted to become males were also unheard of. Then in the late 90s, we started seeing a dramatic change. We started seeing college students that were coming out as transgender. Many of them were biological females transitioning to male. In fact, often more of them. And we also started hearing terms like genderqueer, identities that really we had never heard of before. And then in the last 10 years, there's been another dramatic change, and the age of our average client has gone down so much that at this point, we see one or two new transgender clients per week, and almost all of them are high school age or younger, down to the age of 3 or 4. So the question is, where did these kids come from? How come there's so many of them now and there were none of them 25 years ago? Is it because we're giving birth to more transgender children? I don't really think that's the answer. What's happening is that the culture has changed. And the culture has changed so much that children, that transgender people are feeling comfortable coming out at younger and younger ages. So these kids have always been with us, but these are the kids that 25 or 30 years ago, we wouldn't have seen them until they were middle-aged and had spent an entire lifetime in shame, secrecy, and hiding. So this is a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. Things have changed a lot in 25 years. Now we know that transgender people are not mentally ill. We know it's a normal variation. The same treatment that would have been foisted on us 25 years ago, the gender conformity treatment, is now considered unethical, thank God. Because now we know that the worst thing that you can do to one of these kids is to force them to conform. It is absolutely soul-crushing to make these children be someone who they aren't. And it contributes to the high suicide rate that these kids have. So let's get back now to how the culture has changed and why the culture is supporting these kids in a way that they didn't before. The interesting thing about it is the support for transgender and gender-variant kids didn't come from the gay community. It didn't even come from the transgender community. It came from changes in parents. It came from parents who felt differently about allowing their kids free gender expression. And by parents, I mostly mean mothers. It's not that dads aren't supportive or they're never supportive, and certainly many mothers aren't supportive. There are plenty of families that reject their transgender kids. But by and large, the movement to support transgender and gender variant kids has come from moms. The two organizations that are the biggest ones in the country protecting these children, Trans Youth Family Allies and Gender Spectrum, both were started by mothers of gender variant kids. These are the moms that are feminists or the daughters of feminists. These are the mom that believed all that free to be you and me stuff. They believed in breaking down gender roles. These are the moms that got trucks for their little girls and dolls for their little boys. And then when some of their kids went a little further than they had expected, and instead of just being gender nonconforming, came out as transgender, these are the moms that kind of took a deep breath, pivoted, and they're behind their kids 110%. These are the moms that are changing the laws. They're forcing schools to be different. They're educating their families, their friends, their communities. And I want to tell you, it's not easy for them. It is difficult to accept having a transgender kid. It's scary. It's confusing. It's new. You don't know what's going to happen to the kid. But these moms suck up their own pain and deal with it so that they can support their transgender kids.
So, Jeffrey Iovannoni, thoughts on what you just heard from Margaret Nichols, the director of the Institute for Personal Growth?
Coming from my perspective as both a historian and a cultural scholar, I agree with a lot of her assessment about how things have changed. I can add a bit to her analysis. So she's really great talking about this shift in the 80s and 90s when people start coming out as trans younger and younger. One of the big things that's happening during that time period that she doesn't mention, first and foremost, is the popularity of the internet, right? People having the internet in their home. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you can go online and connect to other people who are like you that you might not be encountering face to face on a daily basis. And we actually see a huge rate shift in people who are identifying as trans. The internet becomes more popular because that information is more accessible. The other piece of that is something else that's going on during the 90s in particular. After feminist movement, gay rights movement are starting to become more mainstream, and the changes that those movements were advocating for are becoming more integrated into society, is then we see in the 90s in particular kind of more radical queer movements that are emerging that are addressing some of the issues with the previous feminist and gay rights movement, namely that those movements didn't go far enough in terms of critiquing binaries of identity around gender and sexuality. One of the things I don't agree with completely in terms of Nichols' analysis is when she's saying that the change is really coming from parents and mothers in particular, in the sense that I think she's discounting a lot of the work of transgender activists, right? So how did the mothers, how are they even able to access the support information for their trans or gender nonconforming kids? A lot of that is coming from activism within the trans community itself.
I hear you. Well said. Well said. Darren Steele, what are your thoughts on what you just heard?
There's a lot there. I actually want to maybe add some thoughts to further what Jeff said, thinking about how much the internet has really changed the world. You know, there are aspects of, you know, evolutionary biology that take millennia to change, but society can change literally in a snap of a finger compared to how we evolve as human beings. So suddenly we have the internet. Suddenly we have different displays of what people can look like and gender identity. Suddenly we have, like, just if I came out in 1984, which I did, I had no one to look up to for who I was coming out as a gay man. But with the age of the internet, you could be at 13 or 14 years old seeing other people representing, expressing themselves.
Especially on YouTube.
Yeah. And then going back a little farther, and I'm thinking the difference in representation in the 50s and the 60s, you know, very small, mostly gay or gay and lesbian organizations protesting for visibility were trying, like I think Mattachine Society and other individuals like that, were trying very hard to fit in. So it would be, okay, well, women, if you're a lesbian, dress like a woman. If you're a gay man, dress like a man. Be respectable. Wear a suit and tie. Wear a dress and heels. Wear the clothes that represent your quote-unquote gender at that time, because they were fighting so hard for acceptance. But even within that movement, there were people saying, no, we don't want to have to visibly express or represent the status quo. We are trying to make this difference. And now we have that sort of bridge, as Jeffrey was talking about, with the internet.
On that note, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing, based on a person's sexual orientation, was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill, but without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. Four PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
I'm Susan Gapka, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So definitions, I'm going to kick this one off, and if my experts want to chime in, if I have misrepresented anything that I'm about to say, please do, Jeffrey, Darren, that sort of thing. So biological sex deals with male, female, and in, I think in the rare instance, intersex, and that has to do with genes, hormones, genitals, and essentially lives in the groin and the crotch, so to speak. Gender identity, dealing with the internal self of male, female, or a combination, essentially lives in the brain. Gender identity and gender expression essentially is how we present how we feel to the world, whether we feel masculine, feminine, or a combination of both. Do you guys agree?
So we could think of gender as biopsychosocial is the fancy term that I would use for that, right? So there's a biological component to gender in terms of sex, in terms of anatomy. There's a psychological component in terms of gender identity, and then there's a social component in terms of gender expression. All of those different pieces of gender work together to make up the broader concept and how we socially understand it. And though those three pieces of gender are related, one doesn't necessarily automatically determine the next. So, for example, just because you have a particular anatomy doesn't mean you're going to identify in a particular way, nor does it mean you're going to express your gender in a particular way.
Right. So Jeffrey, let's stick with yourself. And why don't you tell us what cisgender is and, go for it.
Sure. So it's a term that was forwarded by transgender activists, and it's really only become popular in terms of mainstream usage within the past decade. This is a prefix from Latin, and it means on the same side of. So essentially, people who are cisgender are people who identify with the gender they were assigned at birth, right? So they stay on the same side. They stick with that identity. Another way that we can think of cisgender people is people who are not trans. And this is important terminology to use because it names an unmarked dominant group. So we don't have a situation where, on the one hand, we have this group of people that's labeled as transgender, and they're considered other and odd and weird, and then we have the unmarked group that is considered normal. Having a name for cisgender people essentially levels the playing field.
So transgender, Darren, do you want to take this one?
Sure. Actually, I wanted to pipe in with what you might see a lot of people doing in email signatures and sometimes on social profiles and dating apps. People will sign off preferred pronouns, he, him,
right,
and all that sort of thing. And then those are usually individuals that are taking part, I guess, in this social experiment to change, as Jeffrey was describing, to move away from this dominant sort of heteronormative group that is not trans, and saying, well, I'm just trying to be inclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
Ask me the question again, please.
Transgender, the definition.
That's an interesting one. And if I mess up with this, I apologize to anyone who is listening who is trans.
And Jeffrey, if you want to chime in at any point, please do.
Because, sure. I will just say, I think it's important to say that I identify as a cis gay male. Transgender, as I understand it, is someone who is not at or does not identify with the gender they were assigned at birth.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey, do you agree with that?
I can get a bit more historical analysis there. So transgender is a term that becomes popular in the 1990s. And activists in the 1990s, so people like Leslie Feinberg or Kate Bornstein that were really starting to use this new terminology to challenge binaries of gender and identity, were really using transgender at that time as an umbrella term. And when I say an umbrella term, I mean a term that describes a shared experience, but not necessarily a specific identity. So an umbrella term for people who transgressed or defied gender norms in one way or another. So essentially they were using it as from an activist standpoint, to create this terminology to unite gender nonconforming people, today it's become, in terms of the popular usage, a bit more narrow, and this is why language in terms of gender is always imprecise and a bit slippery and changes over time. So we have some people who are using transgender today to describe people who, as Darren said, in the past we might have identified as being transsexual, right? So people who don't identify with the gender that they're assigned at birth and then transition. And then we also have people that are still kind of using it as this more broad catch-all term to describe people who are in some way gender nonconforming.
So, Jeffrey, let's stick with yourself. Intersex.
Sure. So intersex is another umbrella term. So again, shared experience, but not necessarily a specific identity. For people whose reproductive or sexual anatomy doesn't conform to our standard Western medical definitions of male or female, intersex is another term that becomes popular in the 1990s. However, today within the medical profession, there's been a move away from the term intersex to this new term, disorders of sex development, or DSD. So a lot of intersex people, they'll find that medicalizing, pathologizing, problematic. But part of that is also intersex is often kind of included underneath the broader umbrella of the LGBTQ community. So there might be people or parents that don't want to see their child being associated with the LGBTQ community. And also, medical professionals, I think we're, trying to come from the standpoint of a parent wants to, right, know what is going on with their child and how that can be addressed. But so there's contention in terms of how we're going to define intersex people at this moment.
So gender non-binary. Darren, do you want to take this one?
I think that means it's something I talked about on my podcast recently. Non-binary is the person saying, I'm going to reject this entire concept of there's only one gender or one sex on one side, and then it's the so-called opposite or the other on the other side.
Either male or female.
Yeah.
They're rejecting that.
They're saying we're also rejecting the concept. So instead of saying the world is constructed with this idea of male, female, masculine, feminine, just non-binary altogether, which begs the question why even use the word non-binary in the first place, because it's calling up the problem of the concept, that the construction of that idea.
So I think the next two terms may be considered like umbrella terms when it comes to gender identity, gender queer, and gender variant. Jeffrey, would you agree with that? Would those be considered like umbrella terms?
Absolutely. Right, so gender variant, basically an umbrella term to describe people who defy social and cultural norms of gender in one way or another. Genderqueer is actually an identity label that was popularized during the 1990s to essentially, it's almost synonymous with people today who fall into the more kind of contemporary category of non-binary, right, which kind of speaks to Darren's point. Is the term genderqueer in some way a bit more radical in terms of challenging the gender binary, because the term itself doesn't reference the gender binary?
This may sound like an odd question, but why these new terms? Like, why go from, say, transsexual to transgender, from what was once considered hermaphrodite to intersex, and now, Jeffrey, you're saying it's being considered something else, from people that may be androgynous to people that, you know, maybe gender variant or gender queer. Why these changes when it comes to terminology? Jeffrey, did you want to start off on that?
Sure. So I think in Western culture, we often have been taught to think of gender as something that is essential. It's fixed. It's transhistorical, meaning it doesn't change over time. It's emanating from our biology, when in fact gender is very much a social and cultural concept. It's created by people. So our understanding of gender has changed over time.
And is that because of medical advancements?
Scientific advances, social justice movements, okay. I think that have challenged oppressive notions of gender and identity and sexual orientation and other systems of domination that are connected to those ways of being in the world. So as our knowledge advances and changes, we have to come up with new language to describe that understanding and that reality.
Right.
Ideally in a way that creates more justice and dignity and equality for people.
And Darren, in regards to these new terms, are these something that are recognized worldwide? Is it just a North American thing? Because I'll be honest, if I'm, say, doing some research on something, I'll come across people even as recently as, say, a month ago on Vice, where there was a panel of LGBT individuals talking about politics, you know, whether they're conservative, liberals, that sort of thing. And there was a trans woman on there, and she was referring to herself as transsexual. She's a transsexual. So are these terms something that's recognized worldwide, or is it just a North American thing? How do you see it?
Definitely not worldwide. I mean, we could probably connect most of North America with certain parts of Europe. And then it's going to depend on what country we're going to go into and whether that country is managed by a dictatorship regime or whether it is strongly powered by some sort of a religious, maybe strong Catholic or something like that. I'm thinking certain countries in Africa. I'm thinking North Korea. I'm thinking Russia and other places like that where there's certainly going to be a looking to some of the freedoms and the equality and the rights and the politics of the quote-unquote West, the Western world, and what we're creating for ourselves there. But then the pushback within the dominant ruling power that's going to seek to oppress the individuals who are trying to express themselves. So there may also be like differences just in language in that they're using different language. So transsexual may be a word that comes out when a person who does not speak English as their mother tongue, or I should say their native tongue, I guess. But that might be the word that's used in their language almost transliterally, and then they sound it out and they think that's the quote-unquote correct word to use in mm-hmm. English, and it is, but it carries a different meaning, mm-hmm. which is what Jeff was referring to about how fluid language is and language changes, mm-hmm. but language is also dictated, or the meaning of words is dictated by the society and the time in which we grow up.
So Jeffrey, are you seeing these new terms maybe starting in North America potentially? Are they leading the way for the rest of the world, do you think?
I think it's a double-edged sword, right? And it goes back to the observations I was making earlier about the internet and now the popularity of social media, right? That this terminology can spread in a transnational context. But part of it is also a function of colonialism, right? The dominance and the supremacy of North American and European cultures, right? And then is there a scenario where, you know, people throughout the globe feel that they need to adopt or perhaps subconsciously adopting terminology or understandings of gender and sexuality that are coming from a predominantly white European context. And it's interesting, right? Because a lot of these terms are developed as a way to think about gender more expansively, more accurately, with more justice. But is it actually doing that, right? If then it's getting imposed upon people who might be coming from a context where then the specific meaning of gender or identity within their native culture is then getting lost or obscured in favor of these Western definitions.
Wow. A lot to digest there. Well said.
Right.
Well said, both of you. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
Hi, this is Nikki Ward, and like me, you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So in the last segment, we were talking about old definitions, new definitions, and I guess maybe what's underlying that could potentially be called progress. So in 2017, Dutch Railways, Netherlands, Spoorwegen, essentially their CP Rail here in Canada, their national railway, decided to make their announcements gender neutral, going from ladies and gentlemen to dear passengers. Jeffrey, what are your thoughts?
I'd be interested to know if there was any pushback to that, but certainly just that simple shift in language is going to make people who are trans or gender nonconforming or non-binary immediately feel more welcome. And there's so much research that suggests that when we accommodate trans and gender nonconforming people and when we use their names, when we use their pronouns, it has a significant positive effect on their mental health and well-being.
Darren, what are your thoughts?
I'm thinking immediately to German, and I'm rusty, but that's my part of my background. I didn't quite finish my master's in German language and linguistics, and I was looking at that issue way back then in like around 93, 94, 95. When you announce something like that in German, you would probably say meine Damen und Herren, or you might say Passagier und Passagierinnen. So you would be saying the plural of male passengers and the plural of female passengers. The problem is that German as a language grammatically takes a declension to indicate gender. And it's great that in English and probably in Sweden, and I don't know how the language works grammatically, linguistically, or from a declension standpoint, how they were able to get around that. But think, for example, in English, we used to say actor or actress, and we default now to just actor. We don't label the gender. But there's an interesting question there. Has there been something lost or has there been something gained? And I'm sure there could be people that could be arguing on either side of that. But I know recently somebody wrote on my publication thing queerly about they were studying in German and they were non-binary and they asked the teacher, how can I identify in this language that forces me to identify by gender because it requires a declension? Mm-hmm. So that's my response is like, how do we deal with languages mm-hmm. and probably even French for that matter?
Right. So sticking with progress. The WHO, not the rock group, but the WHO, the World Health Organization, as of May 25th, 2019, will no longer classify gender identity disorder as a mental disorder. The health agency is reclassifying the diagnosis as gender incongruence, a feeling of distress when an individual's identity is at odds with the sex they were assigned at birth. Jeffrey, thoughts?
Well, I think that that's an important move, right? And it's also kind of keeping with what we've been talking about in terms of language, right? Reconfiguring the way that we think about gender difference. And certainly it's acknowledging that certain people or certain types of bodies might need particular kinds of medical or therapeutic care, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that person has a disease or an illness or a pathology, right? So if we think about, like, as a corollary example, pregnancy, people who are pregnant typically need certain kinds of care, but we wouldn't classify pregnancy as a pathology, right? I don't love the term gender incongruence, and I wonder if the term itself is a bit, right, saying a person is incongruent, I wonder if that is in and of itself
problematic,
othering and pathologizing, even though the intention of the WHO is to move away from that sort of understanding of trans identity.
Mm-hmm. Darren, what's your take?
Yeah, I appreciate Jeff's take on it. I would say the incongruent still feels a little awkward to me. It's like they're making a step in the right direction, but incongruence
still doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, it says to me that it doesn't fit, that there's something odd or awkward. And I mean,
one of these things doesn't belong.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted something and I just want to read it. It's really short. It said, sex and gender may seem complex, but that's no reason for people to limit their thinking or refuse to accept other people's experience and identity as authentic. And incongruent doesn't say authentic. It says you're somehow not quite authentic. You're somehow not quite yourself.
You don't fit in.
Yeah. So should we say gender nonconforming, gender variant? One of the words that we talked about, it like just previously, which then allows the individual to say, picking up from Jeff, to say, hey, I need some care. I need some help in perhaps therapy or in medical care because I actually want to consider transitioning, but there's nothing wrong with me.
Jeffrey, do you see a time maybe 5-10 years from now, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less, where there will be male, female, and maybe X, gender X, that sort of thing, or a third thing?
I think we're certainly seeing a move towards that. For example, in Australia, they have a gender designation of X, that you, X for variable, that you can have on your identity documents. Recently within New York City in the U.S., and also on the West Coast, I believe in Oregon, so different states and cities are having similar options, right? Mm. You could have an X designation for gender. I think we're definitely moving in that direction in terms of the current state of the United States, because there's a lot of variation between state and region. Definitely not every part of the country is going to get on board with that as quickly as others. So like all social justice movements, it's a process, not a one-time event.
Mm-hmm. Darren?
Yeah, I was going to say something I was reading by Anne Fausto Sterling, a couple of things, the five genders revisited and then sex, gender. She talks about this idea that we don't need to see someone's genitalia, their gonads, to describe their gender. And if we could move to a world where we didn't have to mark male or female on a driver's license, on a passport, there are other ways to identify. There's height, there's weight, there's hair and eye color. There could be fingerprinting as a way of identifying an individual just for the movement of people within society. But to have to maintain this hegemonic sort of patriarchal control of the binary, that's one of the challenges that we have to deal with to be able to break out of that mold that's been around for so long. And that's going to really confuse some people, but it's going to require some understanding and some learning and some compassion, I think.
Jeffrey Iovanoni, how can people find out more about you online, your writings, that sort of thing? How can they do that?
So people can check out my writing on Medium. I'm at J-E-F-F-R-Y, period, I-O V-A-N-N-O-N-E at medium.com. In particular, my column that I write for Darren's publication, Think Queerly, the column is called Talk Queerly, and I write about LGBTQ culture and politics. And people can also find me on Instagram, and I'm Dr. Jeff Gender Prof. So like Dr. Jeff Gender Professor, but just Prof.
Nice. And Darren Steele, how can people find out more about you and all the things that you do?
Well, to promote Jeff a little bit more as well, so you can go to thinkqueerly.com. That'll take you directly to the publication on Medium. You'll find work by myself, by Jeffrey, and a whole host of other individuals across the LGBTQ plus spectrum. For me, primarily my website, which is darrensteele.com. That's darrensteele.com. You'll find my articles. You'll find my podcast, The Living Out Podcast, which is on iTunes and all the other places that you'll listen to podcasts.
Well said. Well said, both of you. Jeffrey Iovanoni, Darren Steele, thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. You are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Cisgender, transgender, gender non-binary, everything in between. I think what's most important to remember is that at heart we are all individuals having a human experience. Don't forget, get social, get interactive on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So get Rainbow Country wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, including the full 2-hour episodes under the Archives banner. marktara.com. Oh, by the way, last week, Rainbow Country was number 3 on Podomatic's gay and lesbian chart. And that is because of you. Next week, Indie Week. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, this is Police Constable Danielle Botno, also known as LGBT Cop, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.